This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Good morning. Welcome to this breakout, Raising Avid Readers. My name is Bethany Peachy. I teach grades 5 and 6 at Valley View Christian School. And I'm delighted to be here with you this morning. To start off, I'm going to give you some lines from some fairly familiar books, and I'm going to let you tell me the name of the book or the author of the book. So the first one, the more that you read, the more things you will know. The more that you learn, the more places you'll go. Do you know which book it is? Yeah, I think you're right on that. There was also, I was thinking maybe it was in the book I Can Read With My Eyes Shut as well. By the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all because once you are real, you can't be ugly. Except to people who don't understand. The Velveteen Rabbit. But no one except Lucy knew that as it circled the mast, it had whispered to her, "Courage, dear heart." The Dawn Treader. The Dawn Treader by C.S. Lewis. My bath was too hot. I got soap in my eyes. My marble went down the drain. And I had to wear my railroad train pajamas. I hate my railroad train pajamas. That's correct. Kindred spirits are not so scarce as I used to think. It's splendid to find out there are so many of them in the world. You heard a little bit from Anne this morning in our main session. One of my favorite reads as a child. Bah, humbug. The Christmas Carol. Fern was up at daylight, trying to rid the world of injustice. As a result, she now has a pig. A small one, to be sure, but nevertheless a pig. It just shows what can happen if a person gets out of bed promptly. Just a little poll here. I'd like to kind of get a feel for who my audience is. How many of you are new teachers? A few of you taught for 1 or 2 years? Okay. 3 and ever after. All right. So we have a spread here. Why read? Why should our students be reading? Why is reading important? You're here, so I'm assuming that you think reading is important. I'd like to hear from you. Why read?
Read, you
can go anywhere. Okay. If you can read, you can go anywhere. You're saying traveling through books. Good.
And history.
Yes. Yes. So shared experiences, discussing books with other people.
Empathizing with other perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Empathizing with other perspectives. God communicates with us through His written word. And I think that's a foundational reason for us to learn how to read and to care about reading. And like has been mentioned, readers develop the ability to understand how others feel and think. So it's growing compassion, inspiring and growing our character. It makes us more flexible in our thinking as far as like more open to maybe new ideas or other cultures, customs, and ways of doing things. In the book, Give Your Child the World, I want to read just a bit from the foreword. It says, books are the answer to our wanderlust. From the moment we crack open the cover, a book transports us to worlds exotic and unknown. We breathe in the glory of different colors, landscapes, and cultural mores. Books are like passports, but so much cheaper to use. Along with us, our kids can smell the smells of the Middle East and touch the textures of South America. Their hearts can melt for God's greatest creation, people, diverse, beautiful people. I have a visual here on the slide that I like, that I think kind of answers the question of why read. Reading gives us eyes to see things in a different light. Why don't our students read?
Sometimes it's because, especially if they're having problems like decoding, it's just a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm. We also don't like to do things that are frustrating and hard for us. Right? It's not something that we would pick as a hobby. Good? Anything else?
If the attitude at home is that reading is kind of a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. We follow the example of the people around us.
For some of them, videos and movies are so much more exciting.
Mm-hmm. We have a hard time being that exciting. And books for sure, right? Yeah. You folks just went in the order I had it on my notes, so I don't know. So I'll just recap it here. Learning difficulties or struggles, difficulty decoding and comprehending. We're not shown by example, so we might not be surrounded by lots of books to read, or we're not making time for it. We'd make time for the things we value. So if we don't value it, then we won't be doing it. And also, movie watching, videos, that kind of thing, because probably many of you, I have experienced the thing where I'm talking about a book and yes, Sam, I watched it, right? From my observation, we have little first graders that come to school and many of them are excited about learning how to read. They love books. But it seems like for too many of them, by the time they get to about third grade, between grades 3 to 6, their love of reading just develops, or it just dies a slow death. You have people that emerge and love to read and just read more and more, and then the rest just slowly stop or maybe have never really started. So my goal today is to inform you or to remind you and also to inspire you. You have an important responsibility, and that is to grow the love of reading in your students and to ask yourself, how can I help my students enjoy books? Are there things that I'm doing that kill the love of reading? And how can we help our students form a practice or a habit of reading? So the question presents itself, how are habits formed? By repeated practice, by doing it again and again. So we grow our readers by reading. And we could stop the breakout there. How do we grow avid readers? They need to read. But we want to look at some specific ways, tools, and things that you can do in your classroom to help your students. You will need to provide the space, the time, the books for your students. and you'll need to pick their interest. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I call the appeal factor. So, I love cereal. I can eat a good bowl of cereal any time of the day or night as dessert. But when I go shopping and I look at the cereal in the cereal aisle, I don't see it like this. I probably wouldn't even buy very much if it would be like this on the shelf, right? But this is often how we sell our books, as opposed to this. I mean, you walk into the school library and it looks more like this than like this. So we need to make our books appealing so that our students want to pick them up. Bring books into your classrooms and display them. Last year, I bought some shelving off Amazon. It's a narrow little shelf that has a little lip on it, and you just set the books in upright, side by side, and so I have underneath my bulletin board just a long row of narrow shelving. And I'll often display books there that have to do with the curriculum, what we're learning about, what we're studying. I also use the chalkboard tray in my classroom, so I'll set up books like this. And my students pick them up. Without fail, they pick up those books. Do book recommendations to your students. Read the summaries on the back, and then just have them in your classroom. And bring in books that go along with what you're studying, in history or in science. Typically, textbooks are factual. They're, may I say it, fairly dry and boring. They don't often have a lot of stories in them. So find good books and stories that enhance what you're studying. I'm assuming that many of you have a read aloud time in your classroom. You might call it story time, but a slot of time when you read to your students. And there are various reasons that we do this, but I think one reason is to motivate our students to read independently for pleasure. A few things to think about with your read aloud time. I recommend that you pre-read your books. Know what's coming. There are times that I ad lib as I read, or if there are language issues, skip the words, but just pre-read and know what the plot of the story is. Read a variety of genres, historical fiction, biographies, fantasy. Know what's okay in your community. And choose books that students should know but probably won't pick up on their own. It's okay if some of your students have read the books that you're going to read for story time. I like to read books that none of them have read. But it's okay to read some of those books that a few of them have read, because think of the 75% that haven't read them and likely won't read them. Choose books that coincide with what you're studying. Like I've said before, this past year we did Latin America, the CLE's book Neighbors in Latin America. And so for story time, I read Esperanza Rising, set in Mexico, and The Secret of the Andes. Coming back to this book, Give Your Child the World, Raising Globally Minded Kids One Book at a Time. The chapters are divided into the continents. So the chapter about Asia, it has a book list. There's a section, Asian books for ages 4 to 6, And then it has the title of the book, the author, and a small description. And there are books for ages 6 to 8. Books for ages 8 to 10, and so forth. So again, it has a chapter 4. Africa, Europe, Asia, Middle East, North America, Latin America, and so forth. So just a great resource to have to find good books to go with your history curriculum. I have that book. I think it's on the last slide underneath resources. Establish the expectations of your read aloud time. What are your students allowed to do during that time? What should they or should they not be doing? May they leave their desks? May they work on assignments? May they color or draw? My personal opinion is that it's good to require students to sit quietly and listen. Active listening. It's not just an optional thing. It shows that, no, this story is important, and this is what we're doing together right now. One thing I have allowed my students to do is their pen time during that time, because pen time's a fairly doesn't take much mind. You're they're forming letters, and it gives them a slower paced time to do it at their desks. Secondly, sustained silent reading, or SSR. Jim Trelease, in his book, The Read Aloud Handbook, calls SSR, or sustained silent reading, read aloud's natural partner. I am curious how many of you have SSR in your classroom. Okay, a few of you. SSR is a time in your day for students to read a book of their choice. It's based on the principle that reading is a skill, and the more you use it, the better you get at it, and therefore, the more you will enjoy it. So it is recreational, independent reading. There are other names for it that I have seen. Dirt, deer, and squirt. So you can choose the one that humors you or your students the most. But I would recommend that you put it into your daily schedule. Just like physical exercise is better in small daily amounts rather than one huge amount one day a week, so it's also more helpful for your students to be reading in small slots frequently rather than, you know, one big chunk on Thursday. So when should this happen? Once a day. For 10 to 30 minutes a day. A good time slot that I have found in my classroom is right after lunch recess. So we come in from lunch recess. Actually, before we go out for lunch recess, my students are supposed to have a book on their desk, so that when we come in from recess, they're at their desk, they have their book, and they sit and read quietly. Depending on your classroom, the size of your classroom, the students in your classroom, you might think about, what do you like to do when you're reading? So for me, I don't usually go sit at the kitchen table on a hard chair to read. You know, I find a couch or some other place to read. It's more of a relaxing time. So if you have space in your classroom, you might let your students find corners on the floor to read. I allow my students to choose their own books for SSR under certain qualifications. It's not a time for looking at picture books. It is SSR, so sustained silent reading. They should be reading. They may need help choosing an appropriate book according to their reading level. And like I said, they should have a book at their desk ready to pull out every day. Then you will have the student or students that they don't have a book when it's time for SSR. So I'd recommend that you keep some books handy, and then at that point, you give them one, right? They can choose up to a certain point, but then if they don't have the book at the right time, then you hand them a book. I've also done that if they don't have a book, then they just need to pick up an encyclopedia. I don't know about that. What ends up happening is they page through it and look at all the pictures instead of actually reading anyway. So, and lastly, be a role model. As busy teachers, we might say, I don't have time to read, or I wish I would have time to read. And SSR is a lovely time to quickly do some grading or get ready for that next class. But you should sit down and read too. Give your students, sorry, let me back up. It might even just be, you know, the book that you're going to be reading for story time or something. But I think that we should be setting an example for our students. So it's a great time to just pick up and read a chapter in the book that you've been wanting to read. And then give students the opportunity to tell what they have read. When I hear other people talk about the books they're reading, it makes me want to read it. So you might take a minute or two after SSR and say, does anyone want to tell us something that they read? Depending on your group of students, if it feels to you like there needs to be more accountability, you're not sure if reading is really happening, you could have a little paper where they need to keep a log of the book they read and how many pages they read. But this is not something that is graded, or it's just a time to read. You're making space in your day for reading. Read poetry to your students. Lots of poetry. You can even memorize poems with your students, but not as an assignment. They hardly realize they're memorizing a poem. So what I've done some years is posted a poem of the month beside the classroom door or on a bulletin board, and then we recite it. We're lining up to go out for recess. We're still waiting for that last student to get in and get in line. Or between classes, have them stand up and recite the poem together. I'll often do I say, you say kind of thing. So let's do that. We'll do two short ones here. I'll say it and then you repeat it after me. Way Down South.
Way Down South.
By Anonymous.
By Anonymous.
Way Down South where bananas grow.
Way Down South where bananas grow.
A grasshopper stepped on an elephant's toe.
A grasshopper stepped on an elephant's toe.
The elephant said, with tears in his eyes.
The elephant said, with tears in his eyes.
Pick on somebody your own size.
Pick on somebody your own size.
What you will find is when you do this, your students repeat it back to you just like you say it to them. This world is so full of a number of things.
This world is so full of a number of things.
I'm sure we should all be as happy as kings.
I'm sure we should all be as happy as kings.
By Robert Louis Stevenson.
By Robert Louis Stevenson.
Have a poetry recitation. Invite other classrooms to come or invite parents to come. Make it enjoyable. I have this mind picture of a few years ago. My students were memorizing the poem, or we were memorizing the poem, When the Leaves Came Down by Susan Coolidge. And there's dialogue in the poem, so we have the tree. It's talking to the leaves, and the leaves are talking to the tree. It's during the fall, so the leaves need to fall. but they don't want to go to bed. So we had memorized this poem, and then I'd put my students into groups, and they could come up front and just recite it to the class. But I had one group who wanted to act it out. And so the stool that I had in the front of the classroom, the one person stood on there, they were the tree, and the other students were the leaves, and so they were around the tree, and then they were huddled at the bottom as they fell, and they were just enjoying it, loving it. And they had memorized this poem without thinking about it. So make it something fun, not an assignment that you must do.
What was the meaning of that poem?
The second one? Or the first?
When the leaves came down. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The thing that's fun about that one is that it has lots of dialogue in it.
Mm-hmm.
Reader's Theater. This is a reading activity that promotes reading fluency. It includes oral reading through reading parts in a script. It provides good opportunity for reading aloud with expression. And it's more of interpreting orally how you read it than acting out what you're reading or drama. So what I do with Reader's Theater is I choose a script, or you can write your own based on a book. I make groups ahead of time. So if I make a group of four students, according to how many characters are in the Reader's Theater, I may assign. So if one character has a lot of, is talking a lot in that piece, I might assign someone who enjoys reading more. And then these groups get to practice before they get up front and present their Reader's Theater. You might do a performance just in your classroom, so one group does it for the rest of the class, or you might do it for another classroom in your school. I have two short ones here, and I'm gonna need some volunteers. So who enjoys reading aloud? Could I have three people come up front, please? Come on up. Three people. Marilyn, Ruthanna, and Josiah. All right. I'm just going to hand you paper so you're not choosing your character today. Have your piece highlighted. So before this, my students would have had time to work in their groups and practice together before they present. But then after they've practiced and they're ready, and I would usually give I would maybe introduce it on day one, and they would have a bit of time to practice. Day two, they have some more time to practice together, and then present on day three. So this is the story of Frog and Toad Together by Arnold Lavelle. And you can just read it in your highlighted pieces.
Toad and Frog are best friends. One evening, Toad decided to bake.
These cookies smell very good, and they taste even better.
Toad ran to Frog's house to give him the cookies.
Frog, Frog, taste these cookies that I have made.
Frog ate one of the cookies.
These are the best cookies that I've ever eaten.
Frog and Toad ate many cookies, one after another.
You know, Toad, I think we should stop eating. We will soon be sick.
You are right. Let us eat one last cookie, and then we will stop.
Frog and Toad ate one last cookie. There were still many cookies left in the bowl.
Frog, let us eat one very last cookie, and then we will stop.
Frog and Toad ate one very last cookie.
We must stop eating.
Yes. We will need willpower.
What is willpower?
Willpower is trying hard not to do something that you really want to do.
You mean like trying not to eat all of these cookies?
Right.
Frog put the cookies in a box.
There. Now we will not eat any more cookies.
But we can open the box.
That is true.
Frog tied some string around the box.
There. Now we will not eat any more cookies.
But we can cut the string and open the box.
That is true.
Frog got a ladder. He put the box up on a high shelf.
There. We will not eat any more cookies.
But we can climb the ladder and take the box down from the shelf and cut the string and open the box.
That is true.
Frog climbed the ladder and took the box from the shelf. He cut the string and opened the box. Frog took the box outside and shouted,
"Hey birds, there are cookies!"
Birds came from everywhere. They picked up all the cookies in their beaks and flew away.
Now we will have no more cookies to eat. Not even one.
Yes, but we have lots and lots of willpower.
You may keep it all, Frog. I am going home now to bake a cake.
Thank you.
This is a fun addition to a reading class. What I'll do sometimes is we finish up one book and we have plenty of time in our schedule. Do a few of these in between the reading class curriculum that you do. I have one more example of something else that you can do with Reader's Theater. More as a group research project where you can have students write their own and present it. Could I have 4 volunteers? What do you teachers do when your students don't volunteer? Thank you. So this is a piece of nonfiction that you could have students work together to write something like this and present it. Again, I have your pieces highlighted, so you can just read at the time that it's highlighted. And there are a few places where you're all together. So let's read the title together.
Polar Bears.
Good morning. We are here to tell you all about some amazing animals that live in the cold and snow.
We're here to tell you about polar bears.
Polar bears hunt seals and other animals for food.
Polar bears have thick white fur. Their fur and layers of fat protect them from the cold. A polar bear's white fur serves as camouflage when hunting.
A male polar bear weighs about 1,000 pounds and measures between 8 to 11 feet.
Polar bears have a keen sense of smell. They can smell food as much as 10 miles away.
Polar bears are excellent swimmers. They use their strong front legs like paddles.
Polar bears are also good climbers.
Mother polar bears take very good care of their cubs. A mother polar bear will teach her cubs how to hunt. She will also teach them how to protect themselves from danger.
Most polar bear cubs stay with their mothers until they are 2 years old.
Polar bears dig a den for themselves in the snow. They will live in the den during the winter months.
We hope that you have enjoyed learning about polar bears.
The end.
There are many Reader's Theater scripts online that you can print, or like I said, you can write your own. Find a book that has lots of dialogue, and you might have to change it just a bit, but assign your narrator and your characters. There's one website that I might mention. It's called Fools for Christ, and they have Reader's Theater scripts in Bible stories. So I will use this sometimes as an addition to our Bible lesson. If there's something specific we're studying in Bible, we might take a few days and do the Reader's Theater script that goes with that. Again, I think I have that on your resource page in the back. You could also do it as chapels with those stories. Book studies or novel studies or trade books, whatever you want to call them. So for my reading curriculum, or reading class, this is what I do. Instead of using an anthology like CLE's Reader, I will pick a chapter book, and that's what we do for, depending on the length of the book, it can take us about a month to get through the book. So this emphasizes a story. You're following a character over many days instead of just the short snippets of the variety of stories that we read. Just a little caution, if you're a new teacher, I wouldn't recommend this right off the bat. It's a lot of work. I do a lot of my own developing with it. But if you've taught for a while and you feel like you need something new in your reading class, talk to your school administration first and make sure it's okay with them. If I have a book I want to add to my list, I'll pass it with my principal to make sure that it's an okay book to use in my classroom. Students really enjoy connecting with the story over a number of weeks. A few years ago, I had given my students a little survey just to see what they have to say about this kind of reading class. And a few of them wrote, "I enjoy trade books because it's all one story and you have to wait till the next day to find out more about the story." So building the anticipation. "It was interesting and the author made you want to keep reading." "Trade books are almost like reading your own book. That's why I like them." So in other words, just picking up a story and reading it is what they mean by reading your own book. A few books that I use in my classroom: Amos Fortune, Free Man, The Sign of the Beaver. This is in grades 5 and 6. Island of the Blue Dolphins, The Door in the Wall, The Little Riders. So a typical reading class, or the format, often has these elements in it. We start out with some vocabulary, review vocabulary from previous days. I'll go through the chapter and find words that they want to know what they mean, most likely, words that they should know what they mean. And we have some vocabulary, which is some vocabulary quizzes periodically. I often have them sit in a circle to read. It just gives a different feel than sitting in rows at our desks. We take our chairs and our books and we sit in a circle. This makes up a big portion of our reading class time. We're reading. And then there will usually be an assignment at the end, a comprehension worksheet. I like to focus on different reading strategies, so inferencing, summarizing, predicting, evaluating, and so I make my own worksheet often for that. The thing that's nice about this, we know what it feels like to be teaching a class, and you can feel the impatience in the classroom because your students know they have this lesson that they have to do, and if the teacher would just shut up, they could get their work done. With a reading class like this, they don't know what I have planned. So if we end up having a good discussion, I can change my lesson as I go. They might never see that worksheet that I made because that discussion was more valuable. And we've had some of those really good discussions. So again, if it's something you're interested in, I would advise you to check with your school administration first. The doc has some trade book lesson plans on it already. Betty Yoder, I believe she's from Kansas, has a number of books with her lesson plans. It's an excellent resource. I've printed some of her stuff and used it. So she has the vocabulary words, she has the discussion questions. I highly recommend them. All right, we want to do a little activity here now called a book pass. This is something that I like to use as a way to introduce a science or a history unit. This idea was given to me from Sharon Yoder, who used to teach in this classroom. This activity gives students exposure to books, lots of books, and it arouses their curiosity. So for example, if you're starting a unit on Native Americans, you might go to your school library or your local library and get a bunch of books on Native Americans. And then I pass them out to my students. So those are the books that you have with you. I would have waited to pass them out, except I knew it wouldn't work very well to wait. So many of you have seen your books already. Typically, the books would be upside down, so they wouldn't be able to see the book yet. And if you could pull out, actually no, you don't need that paper yet. Just take your book that was on your chair or desk. Does anyone need a book? Passing around the books until everyone has had a turn looking at every book in circulation. And then at this point, I would collect the books. And if you have a table or use your classroom floor and lay out the books. And then students need to choose one book. So now they have seen a lot of the books. There are probably one or two that they really would like to go back and look at more in depth. So I'd lay them out on the floor and have students, you could have them come up, again, depending on the size of your classroom. Everyone come up, walk around, you say go, and everyone reaches for the book they want, right? I would often have a couple extra books on hand, so for the student who was left, who really doesn't want any of the books that are there, you could give him an option from your stack yet. So then they choose one book to look at more in depth, and that's where the book pass report comes in. The second paper that you should have gotten when you came into the class. Does anyone not have this paper? The first or the front page here would be for maybe grades 3 and 4. I use this one sometimes in 5 and 6 as well. So they would use their book and fill out this page. This is their book pass report. The other side has one that's a little higher level. And then this would be their assignment for the day. If you have time in your class, once people are finished, you can have a class discussion. So you could have people talk about why they picked the book they did, a summary of the book, 2 or 3 interesting facts that they learned about the book. And it usually takes up to a class period to get this done. So it's an excellent way to introduce a new unit and to get them excited about what they're going to be learning. Then at the end, I just have the books in my classroom. I display them, and students will often be picking them up and reading them. A few, what I call just more ideas. Invite an author to your school. Talk about the book they wrote, the process of writing. Book reports, a few that I've done are book reports in a bag or on a cereal box. So we use the little brown paper lunch sacks and they read a book. And I have a rubric, which I don't have for you, but if you want it, you can email me. They'll have to do a certain, like an illustration for the front, including the title and the author of the book. They might need to draw a picture of the setting and put it on the side, a summary written and put on the back, and then inside the bag, they'll need to put 3 objects that go with their book. As they're up front talking about their book, giving their book report, they're pulling these objects out and showing them to the class. You can do the same thing with a cereal box. Bookit. How many of you use the Pizza Hut Bookit program at your school? Okay, not very many actually. This is a program that you can just, I think every state, you can do it wherever you are in the U.S. Runs from October to March, so you can just go online and sign your school up and you get these little coupons in the mail as the teacher. And your students need to read a certain amount each month. You, as a teacher, can set the reading goal for each student, and you can vary it by students' ability. or you can allow your students to choose or decide on their goal for the month. I often allow my students to choose if they want to keep track of the amount of time they have spent reading or the amount of pages they have read. And I often let them set their goal, but I'll check it and say, oh, yeah, that looks good, or don't you think you can do a little more? And then throughout the year, you can keep pushing them towards a little higher goal. The motivation is the coupon that they get if they achieve their goal, just a little piece of paper that you write their name on, and you fill in the back with the school and the teacher name and the grade, and they get to go to Pizza Hut and get a little free personal pizza. And it's great for Pizza Hut because then probably mom and dad will buy pizza too. But the child gets a little free personal pizza. So great thing to use. In our school this past, so we've done this for a few years, and this past year we've actually had to have the discussion about upping the ante. It's like the personal pizza hardly cuts it anymore, especially for grades 5 and 6. It only goes through 6th grade, by the way. But we've done a few motivators that have seemed to help this past year. One was an elementary chapel. We would give the coupons there. So just a little bit of like public recognition. We also, with the Book It program, comes a chart. You can put your students' names on it, and every month they can color in if they got the goal for that month. That way it's like a little visual, and they can see if they accomplished each month. Audiobooks. I don't use them a lot in my classroom, but I have in a few areas. So I've gotten audiobooks from the local library. I've also used the library app that has audiobooks. And I have even done some recording. I've recorded myself reading books. So back to the reading class that I have with the trade book, I've had some students who have really struggled to read that. And so if I have silent reading in my class, I will record myself reading it prior, and then I'll give it to them to listen to, but they need to follow along. So it's something that I have used, especially for students who struggle with reading. And one of our teachers, I thought this was a great idea, she, when they went on their field trip, you know how field trips can get wild in the vehicles? She took audiobooks along. So, Little House on the Prairie, and have a great trip. We've also done a summer reading program at our school. If you don't use it, you lose it. So students should be reading over the summer. Sometimes local libraries have a summer reading program, but we have done one for the past couple years. The past 2 years, it's been more of an all of elementary kind of thing. So we offer it to grades 1 to 5. And then you always get into like, okay, the prizes and how much money comes out of teacher pocket. And so last year, it just came out of teacher pocket, but we've done some talking about it. And this past summer, parents needed to enroll their students, and there was an enrollment fee of $10. So we didn't have as many people participating, but sometimes things take a while to catch hold in a community. So, this was for the months of June and July. If you want to know more about what that reading program looked like, you can talk to me later or send me an email. I don't have time to talk about it today. Do a book club in your classroom. Again, could really vary by what that looks like, but you could divide students into groups according to reading ability and assign a book to their group. So it would be kind of like the trade book thing, but you have a few small ones happening in your classroom. I want to talk just a little yet about a library. You should build your own personal library. Collect books at thrift stores and library sales for sure. And I don't know what your community expectations are as far as giving gifts to students, but if the expectation is that you give the students gifts, then give them books. I will go, there's a store in Harrisburg called Second and Charles, and they have a number of used books for a pretty good price, and I'll go there and just buy a big stack and give them to students for Christmas. Or you can give them gift certificates to a bookstore. But encourage them to start their own personal library. The school library, I'm assuming your school has one. So I'm kind of in charge of the library at our school, and I created a Google Excel spreadsheet where co-teachers can enter book titles. So if they go to the library because they're looking for a certain book and we don't have it, then I want them to enter it there. So it might be, I know in the living history threads, there are often book recommendations, extra books that you can read. I want them to put that on the spreadsheet and I can put them into the library. Your school really should have a library that's continually growing. Ask your board if you're allowed to, you know, have a budget, a certain amount to put into the library. I get to spend $750 a year on library books. That's our school budget for the library. So students go to the library and they're like, I've read all these books, right? Then we're back partially to the appeal factor, but also if you're continually adding just small amounts of new books, it keeps them excited and reading. Our goal at our school is to have resources for elementary students enough that they can do small research papers without using the internet. So again, it's providing them with the resources that they need to do their work, but using books to do it.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.